Okay, we're going to start off with Glow giving us a couple of announcements. I think the big announcement in between last session and this was the new website that went online.
Oh, yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about the Brownfields Toolbox, Glow?
Well, we've had the Brownfields Toolbox website for several years, and we kind of decided that it was getting outdated, and we try to keep it current by making constant updates to it. And with all those updates, it was just kind of getting cumbersome and hard to navigate. So our web developer here in my office has been working on it for a few months now, and we finished it off by asking the grantees to send us photos and information about their programs so that we can include those in a slideshow that's on the homepage. And we got a tremendous response to that. So he's got that, and we had the site go live on July 5th. And if you want to check it out, it's brownfields-toolbox.org. And up in the for the PLC sessions, up in the upper right corner, there is a tab called PLC Corner. And like Mike just said, we have all the post-session notes and recordings of all of these PLC sessions, and they're all listed in there under each session that has a name and kind of gives a title of what we talked about during that particular session. But check it out. It is very, very cool. We're very proud of it.
The thing about the toolbox, it's designed for people who both have programs and people who may be thinking of having programs. And it has a lot of background information about the traditional things we talk about, assessment, community characterization, recruitment, placement, training, tracking. It has an area for employers. And there's two really neat sections, I think, in the toolbox. One is a Google map that shows all of the grantees that ever were. And it's got balloons of where their locations are. And you can click on the balloons and get contact information and where they were. And then if there's another one, if you go to the employers, for employers, there's a Google map that's very neat because it shows you the current active grantees that are graduating students and also where they're located. The significance of this, of course, is we'll talk about it in a minute in terms of getting your grant tuned up and writing a new grant. So we'll talk about that in a second. When we talk about announcements, let's get back to announcements for a little bit. In addition to the toolbox this week, and this will only apply to anyone who has a grant, but if you don't, do any of the three of you have grants right now going with EPA?
We do, but ours is at the very end.
Okay. Is this who are we talking to?
From HAC, Harrisburg Area Community College.
Oh, Harrisburg. Okay. You might be interested in the Acres announcement. I'm not sure did you get the Acres announcement? This is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Acres is a way of tracking. And of course, Judith will tell you it's a pain in the neck. It's a way that EPA uses to track the progress of all their grants. And it's a very necessary. It really is, once you get into it, it's easy to use. When it first got started, it wasn't real user-friendly, but it's come a long way. And this is a program that was established by EPA. And they, to be honest, they really needed it. They need to get information about these programs. And they need to find out what everyone's doing and how they're graduating students. And the reason I'm bringing it up in this conversation, and we're going to be talking about re-upping and writing new grants in a second, but this is what Congress is looking for and EPA is looking for. And if you go to that notice, you can phone in tomorrow It's going to be July 12th, and there's a phone number I'll give you in a second if you get a pencil and paper. You could call in to this number, and they're going to go over acres. Now, even if you don't have a grant, I don't think they could keep you from attending this meeting. And the reason you may want to tune into this little webcast that they're going to have is that they give you a rundown of all of the things that they want you to report. Now, if EPA wants you to report these numbers, you know they're extremely important to them. And they also are important in terms of writing your new grant. And I'm just going to go through some of these things. They're asking people for, of course, their cooperative agreement number and their grant number. These are for people who have grants ongoing, like the Harrisburg people. They're asking the number of participants entering your training program, the number of ex-offenders entering the program, the number of veterans entering the program, and they want this for the quarter, and then they want it for accumulation of your program. The number of participants entering the training who are currently receiving TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. They want to know the number of participants completing the program, the number obtaining employment, the number of individuals that did not obtain employment but are pursuing education like a GED or some college course. In other words, they went through the program and they didn't decide to go into a job but decided to go on to school. They wanted to know the average hourly wage of the participants that were employed. And then, very important, they wanted to know about leverage funding, funding source name, what the funding source funded, the activity funded, the source name, the activity funded, just several of these in terms of your leveraging. The significance of this is that when you're writing a grant or if you're re-upping a grant, you may want to pay particular attention to ACRES and what they're looking for, because ACRES is looking for it. You know the grant reviewers are going to be looking at these same issues, and you're going to want to address it in your proposal. Just briefly going back to announcements before we go on, besides the toolbox and ACRES, the other thing that's on the agenda, of course, isn't until next year, but you may want to plan. This is way ahead. This is in May of 2013. Every 18 months, EPA holds the annual, it used to be the annual Brownfields Conference, and that conference brings everyone together who is interested in brownfields. It includes the worker training programs, it includes the lawyers, it includes the insurance companies, it includes the techies and the communities. And if you need to plan ahead, you want to plan for that. And we're submitting panels for job training. There will be job training panels there that you could attend in terms of job training. There will be many of the grantees there and people who are interested in becoming grantees. So you just might mark that on your calendar, May 15th to 17th of 2013. One last announcement, GLO was going to just briefly tell us about the October meeting. This is for Brownfield grantees and alumni, and also some people who attend the PLCs on a regular basis. Do you want to just briefly give us a rundown of that, GLO?
Sure. Every year we do a all grantee meeting is what we call it, where we bring together all the EPA funded grantees. They could be currently working on funds or they have been funded by EPA in the past. But we bring all the people together so that they can learn from each other and from EPA. We have several representatives from EPA headquarters there, and all of the regions are represented. So the grantees actually sit together in their own region with their project officer as we talk about the topics that have been submitted by the grantees that they want to discuss during the meeting. This year it's going to be on October 1st and 2nd in Alexandria, Virginia, which is easy access for EPA headquarters. And like Mike said, all of the PLC members that are active members are welcome to attend. We can pay for the lodging for two nights, and the work meals are included. Your travel to get there, however, is your responsibility. And according to what I was told by headquarters yesterday, this is kind of like that ACRES training. It is a mandatory meeting for current grantees, not mandatory for past grantees, but they are more than welcome to attend.
Great. As far as the PLC goes, our this cycle, our last one, we do 10 PLCs per cycle. The last one will be on the 25th of July, and then we're going to start a new cycle in August. That cycle is going to be interesting because it's going to include, we're going to be inviting all of the new grantees that were awarded grants, and we're going to be talking about setting up a program. We'll be talking about their grants, how they wrote them, and what they need in terms of help. And so if you're interested in writing a grant, it would be interesting to get that perspective. Let's get into what we're going to talk about today, and this is if you didn't get a grant, where do we go from here? And if you're going to re-up a grant, where do we go from here? And I think the key to this, Amber Perry last week was on the PLC, in the last PLC, and she brought some very interesting insights. She talked about 65 applications for funding were sent in, which is not a lot. 15 were awarded the $3 million, which is a couple hundred thousand each. Of those 65, though, she said they were very alarmed because 10 to 15 of them failed in the qualifying criteria. That means they didn't even get past go. And these are her words. She said that we were very disappointed because they were very poorly written. And then when we asked her to explain this or elaborate on this, she basically said, what I mean is none of them failed because they weren't the right entity. They wasn't that they weren't a nonprofit or they didn't fit the basic criteria. But what happened was they wouldn't even mention all the training that was required in the RFP. And in the PLCs, of course, we went over and over, very important to go point by point in that RFP and answer every question and make sure you include everything. And what happened is they didn't even address all of the training that they are supposed to have, or they mentioned the training and they said, oh yeah, we're going to do all this training, but then they didn't budget for it. They didn't mention it anywhere else in the grant. And so it was almost as if several people were writing this grant and someone saw that they had to have that training, they wrote it in, but then the other people who were writing the budgeting part of it didn't bother to or didn't include it in the answers to the questions as they went through the ranking criteria. And right away there were red flags and they knocked them out. So she was pretty disappointed, or she said alarmed, that this number had gone up so much that it is a difficult grant to write. There's no question that they're asking for an awful lot of information and a lot of requirements. But she said it wasn't consistent throughout the entire grant. When you knock out 15, you're down to 50. And so we're talking about 15 out of 50 were funded now. So now we're talking about much better odds in terms of that. The other thing that she said is interesting, and this grant, this last year, the grant process was delayed internally at EPA. She said they would like to get back on track, which means normally the RFPs are due in November. And she actually said, we hope it would be nice if the RFP was out by the time we have the grantee conference, which is in October. which would be very interesting because that means that the RFP would be coming out in September, October time period, which isn't that far away. So for those who are interested in either re-upping or writing new grants, we're about there. We're about time to start getting started for this new round. And now there could be delays that come up, but according to her, the best information we have is that we can expect sometime in the fall the RFP to come out, and then it would probably be awarded in November, and then they could get going. It would be the money, the awards would come in November, the money would come in the spring, so you could get started. So it's basically not too late to get started on this new RFP. The question I think we ask ourselves is, what do we do now? And as we have said, and as Amber said, we need to contact our regional reps right away. And if you submitted a proposal in the last round and it was rejected, you want to get a hold of Amber in Region 6, or you want to get a hold of your regional rep. And in the post-session notes, we'll put contact information for those regional reps. If you had a proposal that was submitted, what you'd like to do is ask them to sit down with you and go over your proposal and where it was deficient. And you may decide you want to use that proposal as a starting point to improve it for the next round. And keeping in mind that many of our grantees have had two or three submissions, and they would get their grant on the second or third. So one thing that would be very wise to do would be sit down and say, I'd like to go over with you where we got knocked down, where did we get points. And they have a copy of the proposal, and they have the reader's notes. So they could say, on these points, this is where you're weak, this is what you didn't do. Now, where is your these courses? Where did you budget for them? They'll go through point by point, and if you've already got a proposal in some draft form, you can start building on that proposal and see where you need to strengthen it. They may say you need stronger partners, you don't have a clear recruitment path, or you don't have a clear path to placement. So, but those things, your regional rep will talk to you about. And they're extremely friendly. One thing about the EPA regional reps is they kind of cheer when people in their regions get grants. So they're really on your side rather than adversaries. They're really easy to work with. So we're going to put their...
Also, Mike, you might want to mention that now is the time to do that, because once that RFP is released, EPA can't help you like that. They can help you like that now, but once it's released, they can't do that. So now's the time for that kind of work.
That's right. It's a good kind of contact. Now, if you have not submitted a proposal yet, what you still want to contact them. And what you want to do is say, Amber, I'm in Region 6. I would like to submit a proposal on the next round. You might ask them, when do you think the RFP will be out? They may or may not know, but they'll probably say in the fall. You might say, well, can you put me on your list of people who are planning on doing this? Can I call you when I have questions? Would you have some suggestions for me? Do you have any examples of grants? Now, we don't. Sometimes they do or may not release them. Usually I think they'll tell you to go to a grantee and ask if you could work with them and get a copy of their grant. One of our success stories, someone who was in the PLC in this last round, this is a Hunters Point family, they talked to us several times, and they said, we're collaborating with another group, another grantee in the San Francisco area. And I said, that is great, because they're very eager to help them. Interesting enough, the Cypress Mandela Training Center also was funded that round. They were actually both funded. Cypress Mandela was funded, and Hunter's Point Family. Two things that this indicates is because you're both in the same general geographic area doesn't mean you won't both get grants. Cypress Mandela has been re-upped for maybe 10 years. They've got a very well-established program. But they're up in the Oakland area. Hunter's Point Family is down at Hunter's Point, which is in the south part of San Francisco, near the Navy. It is at the Navy base. So it's quite a different community. And in their grant, they were able to distinguish between the two. We've had the same situation in Kansas. Actually, in Boston, we've had the same situation where we've got, and in New York, where we've got two different communities that they're addressing. But the interesting thing about Hunter's Point is they knew they needed help, and they went up to Cypress and said, could you help us? And Cypress said, sure, we'll help you. And they coached them. They coached them along. I think they worked with them on their grant, and sure enough, they got the grant. And it was a great success story for them. So there doesn't seem to be any issue regarding another one in near your community. You just have to make sure that you coordinate with them. If there is one nearby, and you could find that when you go to our toolbox, I would probably strongly urge you to contact them. If there was one in the past in your community, I would also urge you to contact them. So in addition to contacting the regional rep, I would make sure that you contacted the closest job training program to you. If there isn't one near you, I would pick one out that's close to you and tell them that you're interested in doing this and try to talk to them and get some coaching. Coaching, one of the things we really encourage in our annual meeting is mentoring of existing grantees with new grantees and prospective grantees. And during the meeting, we ask if everyone would be amicable to helping someone who doesn't have a grant yet. And everyone seems very amicable to this. So they'll help you along. They may give you a copy of their grant if they can, if there's not some rule or reg that won't allow them to do that. But you'll find them usually quite helpful. So what you want to do now is contact that regional rep. The second thing you want to do is you want to start contacting some job training programs near you who have gone through this and done this, and they can give you some really good ideas. And that information, again, you can get from our toolbox. You can also get contact information and who's been funded from the EPA job site website, which we'll post in the session notes. The next thing you're going to want to do is you're going to want to, and we're in the prenatal stages of this, developing this new grant or even revising the grant we have, you're going to want to do some generalized research. And if you look at the grants that have been funded, they are a mix between governmental agencies and community colleges and community organizations. Almost a kind of an even mix. There's cities like Toledo, Durham, Glen Falls. Those are city governments. There's also in the city of Camden, Arkansas. There's also community colleges like Iowa Western Community College. Then there's also community organizations like Hunter's Point Family or LA Conservation Corps, Cypress Mandela, Oregon Tradeswomen. So you've got pretty much an even mix. It is extremely helpful, though, if someone in your team has gotten federal grants, ideally an EPA grant. If not an EPA grant, a Department of Labor grant or a Department of Ed grant or an NSF grant, because in that application it does ask for them. If you've never gotten a grant before, community colleges have a little bit of head up on that because they've usually got a grants office and they're set up for the fiscal agent on federal grants. But you're going to want to, in this pre-planning stages, you're going to want to see who's going to be a good fiscal agent And even though you're the organizer and you may be the one that's going to do all the work, you may want to link up with a fiscal agent. City of Durham is a good example. Durham Tech is basically doing much of the work, the heavy lifting on this, but the City of Durham is a fiscal agent. And the nice thing in that particular group of grants, City of Durham has got brownfields grants. And they can also, they have job training grants of other types, and they've got other federal activities going on. So they've got a lot of federal experience and a lot of experience with grants and grant writing. So while the community college is doing most of the heavy lifting and most of the work on this, they're the fiscal agent and the grantee is actually City of Durham. So, you know, whether in Michigan or Harrisburg, you may or may not decide to link up with your city government. And if you do, what you'll want to do is start that process now to see, do they have a brownfields program? And would they be interested, if they've applied for brownfields grants and they've received brownfields grants, would they like to expand and include a training grant with that brownfields grant? So, for example, again, I'm going to use Durham. Durham has brownfields grants. The same people who wrote those brownfield grants said, well, and the mayor's office loves this. Yes, we could link training to our brownfields grants. So we would like to be fiscal agent. We'd like to be the key. Well, if you're a community college, it's perfect because you could then link and become partner with the city or the county, and you're going to be doing most of the work, maybe all of the work, but this is going to pass through the city government. And they'll be the fiscal agent. They'll handle the accounting, and they'll handle all of the auditing and that type of thing. You may have to do some work on that, but that's what you're going to want to do in these preliminary. In this early stage, you want to feel that out. And maybe you submitted a grant on your own, and you may want to rethink that. You may want to think maybe we would be stronger partner if we partnered with the city and went with them. So those are the kind of things you want to look at now. Once you get into these grants, it gets too late to start changing. So before you even start talking about writing a grant, what we're doing now is just kind of feeling out who would be good partners, who would be a good fiscal agent, who are we going to have write this grant. And one of the things that came up with Amber was the grants were not well written. And I can understand that. My background's engineering and I'm a horrible writer. People that deal with engineers or techies or even project officers, they almost need a team, and one person on that team has to be a really good writer. And everyone does their grants differently, but if you have a good grant writer, sometimes people are negative to grant writers, but if you have people that flow through that grant writer, and in the end, it's almost like throwing things into a funnel, and then it comes out through the funnel unified. And so you may have a lot of people feeding different information into the grant writer, but that grant writer is going to digest all of that information. It's almost like a curriculum writer. A curriculum writer doesn't necessarily have to be an expert in all those different fields, but they have to be able to synthesize all of that and write it very clearly. And if you have a good grant writer on your team, that grant writer can take all your information, even though you're going to control the project and you're going to be the one that's going to be the project officer and the lead person on it. They're going to take your information and they're going to make sure that what was in the beginning in the preamble to your grant and what was in your initial ranking criteria is also going to be in the budget, because they're going to flow through the whole thing. They're going to have consistency through the whole thing. The alternative way of writing some of these grants is everyone's going to submit a section, and the danger is what Amber was talking about. You end up with these piecemeal, so that what was in one part of it is not in another part, and that's kind of a death knell to these grants. So again, we're talking of this in this very early stages. We're just starting to look, not even putting our team together yet. We're just starting to get feel for who we want on our team. Do we want the city? Do we want the county? Do we want, is there a good, who do we want to think about as fiscal agent? Can we scope around and find someone who's got some federal grants, grants experience? Do we have some good, who's got a good grant writer? And usually someone will volunteer that. People will say, it's often community colleges say, we got a killer grant writer. They're really good. So those things are things we want to consider. So we try to keep these to 30 minutes. And next week, or 2 weeks from now, which is the 25th, will be the last session of this cycle. And we're going to kind of continue and kind of sum up some of the things we did during this cycle and then continue with what we need to be doing now in terms of writing these new grants. And then we'll go on from there. Unfortunately, I've been doing a lot of talking here. Is any of Judith or Carol or Amanda, is anything that you might want to add in terms of the context that we've been talking about today?
I have a question. If you partner with a city, does that city have to have EPA funding? I guess a bigger question is, we used to have, some of our local cities had brownfields money to do like pilot or to do various things through their EPA grants, but all those funding sources have run out for those communities. Does that mean that we have less a chance of getting a training program because the city doesn't have the EPA grants anymore or not?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
I don't know that would work in your favor. It wouldn't deter. And even though they don't have funding, they may still have active projects. So I would say not at all. What I would do in that case that you described, if you can locate the people, do you think it's possible to locate the people who were doing those projects in City Hall?
And for Lancaster, yeah. I know the person who actually was the contract manager. She's very
awesome.
Cooperative with us.
Awesome. What I would do is contact them and say we're looking at submitting a grant proposal that will be, we're talking about in fall. Is there any interest in partnering and setting up a training program in our community? Mm-hmm. They will kick it upstairs. We find that the mayor's office, and we're talking about job training at a political time when jobs are so important, and I don't know of a city that isn't interested in job development. You may turn on some light bulbs, and people say, yes, we could do this, and we could combine it with this other program that we're doing, you know, that type of thing. And that's exactly what often they do. They'll say, we could take your program and maybe combine it with this other program and bring in the people in terms of recruitment. And so they may take this ball and really start to want to run with it. So I would definitely, as a starting point, contact them. That's a great idea.
Is there any disadvantage to partnering with a financially bankrupt city?
Not at all.
Harrisburg is having all kind of financial issues right now.
Yeah, I guess you joined the club. You're right. It could work in your favor. These are not political grants. They don't really look at that, and it wouldn't help you and it wouldn't hurt you. EPA is really a non-political. Well, from what the work that we're doing is non-political. It's not like they would say, "Well, we got to give fund to the city, so we're going to fund you." I think it could be good in that in your description of your community. It could help you in terms of being an economically disadvantaged city that needs help, and that has gone a long way. We've got, when we look at Hunter's Point, it's a very poor community. It's they have all kinds of problems. When we look at Oakland, we've got the same problems. Camden, Arkansas, many of these cities have if you were to characterize them, they're very poor and they have some real problems. So, you know, I would say that that could be a benefit in the sense of characterizing your community could be real positive. Well,
could I ask a quick question?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Here on Cape Cod, our year-round community is quite poor. So depending on what statistics we use, if we include the second homeowners, because we're also a very high-end resort area, I don't know if you've seen grants that separate out.
They do, and
they
what
do.
You
okay.
do is we when we talk about writing these proposals, we describe our community that we're going to address. One of the big problems with a lot of the grant proposals is they try to get canned assessments of their community, which means they're just pulling easy statistics off. And those nobody likes those statistics because they don't really mean anything. You can have Camden, New Jersey is a good example. It's like many of the cities, the murder capital of the world. We've got billion-dollar casinos and development along the river, and you've got the highest, one of the highest teen murder rates in the country just a block away. And you've got this very wealthy community and this very poor community. And what we suggest is, yes, we have this development, this community, but the underlying issues here are the indigenous populations. And actually, Hunter's point, I keep coming back to this, such an interesting community because it's the only land left that overlooks the bay and is potentially a gentrification target, but it's a very poor community. But they're going to be building million-dollar condos, but at the same time, they're going to be pushing out people who have lived there for 30 years with all kinds of issues. And so they're at this crossroads of how do we treat the people who really, the indigenous population, who really need the help. And we're not even concerned. The other people are really invisible here, you know. So I don't think that'll hurt you at all. You just do need to describe that very carefully in who you're addressing when you do that. That'd be great. Well, listen, join us on the 25th. We'll send out notices, and we'll send out some closed session notes with some websites on there. If you do get a chance, I'm not sure how interesting this 8 acres session will be, but if you do call in, I was going to give you the number. It's 866-706-2289. If you call that number, it's an SRA conferencing number, and the code for this session is 703-284-3206, and that's going to be a session on how to fill out the acres form.
And do you know what time that is at?
Excuse me?
What the time is?
It's going to, I'm sorry. It's on July 12th at 2 p.m.
2 p.m. Eastern?
Eastern time.
Okay.
Mark Vogelsberg is going to be doing that session. See if I can, if you just call into that number, I think that will get you there. I was going to see if there is also a website associated with that.
I think there is.
Yeah, I think
so. It's www.epa.gov/acres.
Okay.
They did not have any notes or agenda or PowerPoint slides when I went to that site. So, but
no, and they say right on there that you don't need to pre-register. However, after I sent that out on the listserv yesterday, I did hear back from headquarters that it was mandatory training for the new grantees and the existing grantees.
Right.
Okay.
They didn't say you couldn't attend if you were not a grantee, though. So
no, they didn't say anything like that. They were just specifying who it was mandatory for.
it may not be real interesting, but it'll tell you what, if you get a grant, what you're going to have to do. It's basically a reporting form to report your progress. As I said, the significance of this is these questions that they're asking, which we'll put in the post-session notes. Obviously, you're going to want to address those in your grant.
Correct.
Because,
exactly.
They're quite interested in this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll see
you
all on
the
25th. And,
thank you.
Hopefully, we'll get some cool weather before then.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Okay. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.